So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ed Springsteen Show, once again brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where we try our best to keep you informed. I tell you, you know, sometimes you get a little behind. We have so many stories that we're investigating, but we do our best, and welcome to it once again. For those of you guys who are new to the show, we just have frank discussion here. We're going to talk about anything and everything we want to talk about. Our good friend Ed Martin should be joining us momentarily. For you guys that want to call in tonight, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the call-in numbers. For you guys that are already in the listening queue, as always, hit that number one on your dial pad. And if you want to join the live chat, join the chat. We have a ball. In the meantime, Mr. Martin, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm running ragged again. Actually, just a... not a disclaimer, but a warning, we're still loading trucks, so I may have to jump on you here in a little bit. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. You know, I would rather you not jump on me. Jump on your truck, finish loading, but leave me the hell out of that, okay? Because I really don't need the aggravation of jumping on me. I'm getting older. That's
stuff
perks.
If I
want
to jump on you, there's nothing you can do to stop me.
Well, I hear you, sunshine. That's why I pack. But anyway, we've got a lot going on this week. You know, last night we spent a lot of time talking about the Matt Bevin, Mitch McConnell situation. We're going to get into some more national stuff tonight a little bit, but let's start with a couple of local things. For you guys in Indiana who just can't seem to move on with your lives and have to stay up with David Kam, the Courier-Journal is reporting that David Kam has become a case coordinator for something called Investigating Innocence. They're supposed to be a national nonprofit, and what they do is criminal defense investigations for inmates to find out if they were falsely charged and falsely imprisoned. You know, the same thing David Kam swears up and down he was. Now he's going to be an investigator for this project. The interesting thing, Ed, is this is a non-paid, non-position because they have no funding whatsoever. So why the media chose to make this big announcement like it was something is beyond me. But it's a local story. Maybe we should mention it. So I did. I tell you, we do have another interesting story coming out of Louisville today, too, regarding the Louisville Metro Council. I talked a little bit about last night about the Ethics Committee and the changes they're going to try to make the ethics have more teeth, if you will. The Ethics Commission get more teeth. Well, the Public Safety Committee is actually sending something to the Metro Council December 12th for a full council vote as well. And this is what they're calling the pawn law, as far as I can tell. This particular law is going to require all pawn shops in Jefferson County to provide a faster and more thorough daily reporting of all transactions. Essentially what this means, it's a bipartisan project by Democrat Councilman David James, Republican Councilman Kevin Cramer. But essentially what this means is They're going to force the pawn shops to give the police department, the LMPD, a list of all transactions by 11 a.m. every single morning. Like, these pawn shops work for LMPD or something. You know, I get that we need to start worrying about this stuff, but how in the world, or why in the world, would private business put themselves under that kind of a deal?
Well, okay, interesting perspective here. Now, I've had material stolen from my lot. Scrap metal, it wasn't scrap metal, perfectly useful metal as far as I was concerned,
right.
But somebody stole it from scrap. They passed a similar ordinance with scrap metal. You know, they take
mm-hmm.
pictures of your license plate and your transactions and everything. So
that was last year.
I think, unfortunately, given the nature of pawn, you know, cash and carry, that, you know, I don't see that as a bad thing. And I would think, you know, the pawn shops, the legitimate business pawn shops, which there are many,
mm-hmm.
there are also some dirty ones too, but a legitimate business like that would, I could see where they would embrace that and say, you know, because you look at a lot of these things and people are stealing. When the cops do catch them before they pawn it off, a lot of stuff. And, you know, when you're getting into jewelry and things, I can see
mm-hmm.
where that's a problem, and it's a problem going down the road as they would be receiving stolen property unknowingly, but still receiving
mm-hmm.
stolen property. So, you know, I think something like that, a database, would lend itself to the legitimate pawn shop. I can see them going for that.
Well, I think most pawn shops are, I mean, if one to voluntarily do something like that, I think that would be commendable. And, you know, I'm just using pawn shops as the example because that's what they're going after right now. The problem for me is this. Where do the rights of private business end? If the government could come in and order you to give them a daily report of all transactions in a pawn shop on anything that you do. Now, I understand we had a problem with scrap metal theft last year, and I understand why they wanted to pass that ordinance. But where does it stop? When they come up with obesity laws, we're going down that road, you start taking pictures of anybody
yeah.
over 200 pounds that gets a Big Mac at McDonald's and let the LMPD look at them and get their address and find out where they can go to give them a ticket for being obese. I mean, that's the only problem I've got with this. I want to drop crime as much as anybody, and I like the fact that we're going down this road. If LMPD wants to set up a database, great. They should. It should already be in place. But I don't think that you should mandate the private business to give you anything to do with their customers or their legal business. You know, that's essentially to me telling me that we're accusing all pawn shops of being illegal enterprises, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. So I've got a problem with the mandated part of it.
I think the legitimate pawn shops, you know, like you say, I don't think there's a problem. It's a database, and like any database, it's how it's used. But yeah, I would say, you know, I don't have a problem. I'm a victim of that kind of stuff. And before they had the where they would track the transaction scrap metal, I lost
mm-hmm.
a lot of racks that way. nice interlake racks too, I might add. You know, worth quite a bit of money. And some idiot probably sold them. You know, he sold them for scrap. But again, it's just, I think in this case, part of me definitely agrees with you that you know, private business. But I think when you look at the nature of the business. Just as with the nature of pharmacies and stuff like that, you've got things that sometimes you just got to look at and says, okay, are pawn shops willingly or unwillingly becoming fences for criminals? And again, how long they maintain the database and things like that? Because that's one of the problems I would have if they maintained it in forever. At what point are we, you know, your transactions, can somebody go back and dig it up? It's like, look, you do a transaction at a pawn shop, maybe it should be purged in, let's just say, 90 days. If they haven't solved the theft problem one way or the other,
right.
it's probably cleared the books, it's sold, or it's hawked out of pawn or something by then. So, yeah, I think...
Well, the way I'm interpreting it right now, essentially, the pawn shop ordinance requires that all pawnbrokers have to hold all goods for 10 days after they purchase them. So what you're essentially saying is that once you take something in, you got to hold it for 10 days. Now, actually, that's pretty consistent with a lot of different things in the law. You hold your goods for a certain amount of time. You know, and they're supposed to be kept in original form with record of the transaction on site. Now, anytime you pawn anything, you got a record of the transaction. They give you a receipt because that's the nature of pawn. They actually hold that item for a few days or whatever the term is, and you have the option to buy it back before they try to resell it. So that's already part of the pawn that's in there. If police believe there is probable cause, if police believe there is probable cause that an item is stolen, then the pawnbroker is notified and has to hold the item for 30 days. See, I've got no problem with that. Once you file a police report saying that something's been stolen, then the police can go ahead and fax that information to every pawn shop in Louisville if they want to. You know, they can do that. But why does the pawnbroker every day by 11 a.m. have a mandatory report due to LMPD of everything they did the day before? That is wrong to me. If I wanted to have a mandatory meeting as the CEO and the owner of MVM Media, which includes this radio station and includes LouisvillePolitics.com, if I wanted to have a mandatory meeting with every show host or anybody else that does any work for us every day at 11 o'clock, I've got the right to do that. It's my business. If you don't want to do that, then don't work here. You know, you see what I mean? But a pawnbroker is a private business, and we've got an LMPD department telling them, you're going to do this? That makes no sense. I want to get on this phone call real quick, Gabe, because I know this is going to be a limited duration. Paul, how are you?
Greetings, gentlemen. Mr. Springsteen.
How are you, sir?
You are so wrong on this. Look, they need to enforce this thing on pawn shops because that opens the door to flea markets. And flea markets, not just the commercial enterprises, but the ones that people hold on the weekends in their own yard. It's the same concept.
Yard sales. Yep. I agree with you. Where does the road stop? I'm totally with you there. And so, I know you're being facetious, but I'm totally with you there because this goes into yard sales. It goes into garage sales. You know, where does it stop?
The 7th Street Road has got one of the largest commercial flea markets in the city of Louisville's jurisdiction. I can't see why pawnbrokers would be targeted and that operation would not be targeted. For those of your listeners who haven't been to any of those larger flea markets, I want to let you know that there are actually two different universes out there at that flea market. Number one, there's the folks who rent booths on the inside and they have nice climate control. And they're looked at pretty closely. But number two, there is an outside group of vendors. And I'm going to tell you, the outside group of vendors, that's kind of the wild, wild west out there. They're not looked at very closely. And on any given flea market day, you could pretty much find whatever you want. Okay?
Oh, sure.
Pretty much. So, you know, I am in agreement with your assertion that this is just monster-sized government overreach, and they don't know their own boundaries. They don't. So somebody's got to smack them down. You want to volunteer to do that, guys?
Well, I already do. It's what I do every day. You know that. But the thing is, I mean, that's the thing. I know last year they had the scrap metal theft was a big thing. And, you know, and to be real here, and let's give credit where it's due, I mean, you know, Democrat Councilman David James is a retired LMD police officer, and he's also with the Louisville Police Department today. You know, this is a guy who's spent a whole career policing. You know, so I understand we want David James to put in here. And I agree with him, something needs to be done. What I don't agree with and where I fall at is even though they've been able to clear at least 100 cases of scrap metal theft in the last year, according to David James, I don't agree that we have to tell a private business that they're required to report their business dealings to the LMPD every day. That's just Big Brother Gestapo tactics to me, and I don't go along with that. The pawnbrokers are already required to hold the goods for a certain amount of time as it is and as it stands. They're already required. You already have a record when you pawn something.
Background noise?
I am getting some background noise. I believe it's you, Paul. You know, the pawnbrokers are already...
I was going to say, hey, that's me earning a living. You hear these big trucks moving in and out? Yeah.
Oh, that was you. Okay. My bad, Paul. I stand corrected.
I'm coming in awful lot.
Okay. My bad, Paul. I stand corrected. That was Ed Martin. But that's the thing, though, because I don't think that LMPD has a right to do that. That would be like telling LMPD they've got a right to come into my business and find out who I'm conducting business with. It ain't none of their damn business unless I'm suspected of a crime, and they've got some proof that could give them a right to go get a search warrant. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it's no different. This is no different to me. Well, I guess it is. It's a little bit above board. It's really not that different to me than when a mayoral council member or some other government official harasses and intimidates, you know, local business like restaurants or anything else want to send IPL or the health department out to, you know, because they don't like somebody. You know, I've been a victim of that. The show is a victim of that.
Hey, Ed.
Yeah.
Ed, I think this kind of stuff coming from Louisville's Metro Council provides some more fodder for limiting the size of councils like this. We got 26 human beings on this council. That's and this city is only 50% of the size of the city of San Diego, and San Diego manages to get by with only 8 council people. Only 8. But yet we've got 3 times that many, and with 26 people all trying to stake out their own turf and all trying to enhance their own personal reputation, I think that the opportunities for government overreach are endless and boundless. I really do.
I totally agree.
So
I totally agree.
We need to trim the size of this damn council. This council is just way, way, way too big.
Well, and we went down that road. We've actually talked about that for a long time here. As you know, we actually use San Diego for a comparison quite often because, if I'm not mistaken, San Diego has a smaller land mass and more people, or vice versa. I can't remember all the details at this time. It's been a few years. But, you know, we were talking about that many, many times.
Has roughly the same land mass as Jefferson County, Kentucky.
Roughly the same land mass.
They've got 1.5 million people in that land mass. We have 700,000, so they got twice as many people.
Right.
And they managed to get all of their government business done with only 8 council people. Only 8. Amazing.
Yep. And, you know, that's something we fought just a couple of years ago. We won't get that here. That won't happen because the powers that be realize they've got to have as many seats as they can because that much more money they can steal from us and that much more thumbprint they can put on top of our heads. But I do find this story very interesting because of that. Again, I've got no problem with pawnbrokers required to hold all goods for 10 days. They do that anyway as a case of business. 7 to 10 days is what they would normally do anyway because they give you a chance to buy your item back. You know, so that's part of the nature of their business. They're already doing that. I don't have a problem that if the police believe there is probable cause that an item is stolen, that they notify the pawnbroker to hold the item for 30 days. If you get a police report that says this gold necklace has been stolen and you give a description of this and you send it to all the pawnbrokers in Louisville and they happen to recognize that, they want to hold that item for 30 days, they should. It's the right thing to do. I got no problem with that. But mandating that you have to send a report, a truth report is what they call it, of all activity in the last 24 hours to LMPD by 11 a.m. the following morning, it is ridiculous to me. That's Gestapo. And it's not going to stop there. As we know, everything starts somewhere and it never stops. Once they get that little bit of control, then they are. They're going to go into the yard sales, the garage sales, the flea markets, the fall pension, and everything else. This is just a starting point, and that's what I don't like about it, because
the
overreaching government.
Who's the author of this wonderful idea?
Democrat David James and Republican Kevin Cramer.
Oh, my God. I tell you what, those two boys, they've had a major brain fart here, guys.
Well, you know, I actually get David James being involved in this. As I've mentioned, it makes sense to me for David James to be involved in this, try to come up with some way to combat crime. I mean, he spent a career. He is a retired LMPD officer, the first chief of the Kentucky Bureau of Investigation, the state version of the FBI. He's now, you know, with the Louisville Police Department, UofL Police Department. I mean, this guy's whole career has been fighting crime, and he sees this as a tool, and he believes in it. I actually get David James involved in this. What I don't get is Kevin Kramer or anybody else being involved and why they're pursuing it this way. This to me is nothing more than government overreach. And even though I understand why David Jones is trying to combat crime, we all should be trying to combat crime, I don't understand this approach by him or anybody else. It makes no sense. So we're going to have to watch this going forward, but the Metro Council is going to meet on this next Thursday, December the 12th. And if anybody has any problems with this Gestapo, that would be the time to go attend a meeting and have your voice be heard. But make sure you call on Wednesday, the day before. They will not let you speak, which I think is another thing that's dead wrong. They should have an open mic every night, and anybody should talk and talk. But that's just me. So, you know, we've got to start paying attention to these kind of stories, folks. These are going to destroy us as we go forward. Ed Martin? Mr. Martin, going once. Yep, he must have jumped off for a minute. Okay. In the meantime, we do have other news going on. And we've got national stories going on. And here is one that's going to be real interesting to watch. We have followed the bankruptcies around this nation quite handily. At the time, Jefferson County, Alabama, or Birmingham to most people, when they filed bankruptcy, they were the largest municipal bankruptcy at that time that had ever done it. And as we know, it continued being outdone. And now we have Detroit. Detroit was finally ruled eligible to file a public bankruptcy. They will now be the largest public bankruptcy in U.S. history, according to a judge this morning. Judge Stephen Rhodes turned down all objections from the unions, from the pension funds, and the retirees. And he turned them all down. These guys can actually lose under any bankruptcy plan they come to, and it's actually going to be somewhere around $18 billion is what Detroit has to save here. And I find that very interesting because they have been fighting. We have had all these people fighting, saying that Detroit could not qualify to file this bankruptcy, and now we actually have a judgment saying that they can. Good thing, bad thing, other? Paul, what do you think? You're still with us. Well, okay. I guess you're with me, folks. It looks like Paul and Mr. Martin have decided to not be with us for a minute. That's okay. We got no problem with that. But it is interesting when we look at the Detroit bankruptcy, because this is an amazing thing because of the fight that's been going on with it. I tell you, they don't really have a plan yet, but the judge basically just ruled that they can go forward with a bankruptcy filing. There has been no plan out there, but they do have $18 billion they have to fix. To tell you how bad it is in Detroit, you know, these guys aren't even getting garbage pickup in most cases. There have been all kinds of mismanagement for years and years and years. And, oh, yeah, the mismanagement has been by who? Why, the Democrats, of course. Yes, let's talk about our new Democrats. The Detroit Democrats have just run this thing into the ground. There's no doubt about that. So the fact that they're going to be able to file bankruptcy and try to move forward, I think that's a pretty good thing to do. I think it's realistic. I think that it's something that has to be done. The pension plans in Detroit are out about $3.5 billion short. Retirees are scared, as they should be. But let's face facts here. If it wasn't for these runaway union bankrupt pensions, then we probably wouldn't be in the situation we're in Detroit and other cities. We're in the same boat here in Kentucky, folks. We're going to end up going down this road if they don't do something pretty damn quick to get our pensions under control. And I'm not lying to you. Check out Kentucky Fried Pensions. Look it up online, folks. Kentucky Fried Pensions by author Chris Tobey. And you're going to see a major situation here. And we've got problems here in Kentucky as well. So this is going to end up going on. You know, Detroit, it just flat out can't pay their debts. They're totally insolvent. They need a chance for a fresh start. Realistically, 40 cents out of every dollar that Detroit takes in was used to pay for its ongoing debt. So they've never been in a position where they had enough money to continue paying for everything that needed to be done, like the garbage collection and things like that we talked about. So this is going to be interesting going forward. The mismanagement, the graft, greed, corruption from the Democrats that have been running that city into the ground is incredible. So we'll find out what happens with them. In the meantime, moving forward, Martin, if you, when you get back with us, just mention us so I'll know you're there. Moving forward, Detroit is not the only thing in the news right now. There's some other interesting news coming around right now. We have got situations that the Obama administration is getting ready to have some serious backlash. I can't stress that enough, because he is looking to close the commissaries for military families. You heard me right. We're going to talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Ed Sprenger Show, folks. We'll be right back in just a minute. Take care.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Sprenger of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great...
All right, for you guys listening to this show, if you'd like to advertise on this show or any of our other shows on the MVM Radio Network, give us a call at 502-742-8519. That's 502-742-8519. Or write to us at My View Matters, MYVIEW Matters, MATTERS, at AOL.com, or LouisvillePolitics at gmail.com. We'd love to have your business. Give us a call for rate availability. Okay, moving forward, I tell you, it's really, really interesting when we continue looking at all of the things that are going on in the Obama administration and beyond. You know, it's bad enough that we have to continually go through the latest, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, the latest disease of the week mentality is what I call it anymore. Fast and furious, Benghazi, all the other things. We had a government shutdown, Obamacare. We'll get into some of that in a little bit. But when you look at all of the things that are just a total mess, the one thing you probably don't want to screw with right now, especially considering that this nation has essentially been at war for over a decade in the Middle East. We've got all of these soldiers and their families have been suffering for more than a decade for nothing, in most opinions. Well, now we're going to make them suffer a little more. You know, according to the Gateway Pundit, the Obama administration is looking at closing all U.S.-based commissaries, all U.S.-based commissaries that serve the military families. It's going to not only eliminate the discounted goods, as everybody wants to talk about, But they're not thinking about, you know, almost half of those jobs, military commissary bases, are done by military spouses. So they're also taking more income away from the military spouse or from the military family as well. Mayo, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I was just going to say something that goes along with what you were saying. You know how we had our big government shutdown but all the government employees, you know, they got their back pay, right?
Oh, yeah, everyone
else. For our government shutdown?
Sure.
Well, but the funny thing is all the VA people, they still haven't received their money. Any veteran has not received their money. They're right now 1 month or a month and a half short on their pay.
And this is surprising
I didn't know if you knew about that.
No, actually, we're headed in that direction.
I'm
glad you brought it up.
With what you were saying. Yeah. And then a second thing, something that you had brought up on the show about the, whether you want to call it the Polar Bear Club or the Knockout Club, but with Sandy Hook coming up, Obama's big organization's trying to get a thing about the anniversary of Sandy Hook and extended background checks. And just in Newton, Connecticut, in 2 days last week, there were 6 of these knockouts that happened.
Oh, sure. And that's becoming an epidemic. I mean, so we're sitting here, and it's kind of funny. We're actually going to head that direction. You know what? Let's just go there now, because it's disturbing to me that the Obama administration wants to shut down the commerce areas and hurt the military families. It really is. You know, we'll spend some time on that tomorrow night, because we're talking about $1.4 billion in government funds. Now, that's not a lot of money considering the pay structure of most of these guys in the military. In the meantime, though, we're sitting here ignoring everything else. When you bring up Newton, Connecticut, things like that, I mean, let's talk about New York. You know, New York, they're having an abundance of the knockout game assaults. We've got guys that are, you know, we have senior citizens, 80 years old, 76 years old, being victimized by one of the teenage punks going through playing a knockout game and knocking them down. It's not just in Connecticut. It's not just in New York. It's not just in Detroit. This is a major game that's going on all across America. And what's interesting to me, though, since you bring it up, Mayo, what's interesting to me is, why do they refer to this as a game? It's black-on-white hate crime. Why do they call it a game?
Well, here's the thing. Like you brought up, you know, none of the major news media outlets have reported on this. You were one of the first that I heard, and then maybe it was Dennis Prager or Michael Medved second. And as one of them actually brought up today, I can't remember if you did or not, if I'm getting forgetful in my old age, forgive me, but they said if it was a white kids going around hitting, you know, African-American elderly people, oh, my God, there'd be an outrage. So how come there isn't an outrage from the African-American community and none of these pastors or street preachers, as you call them, or anything, are stepping up and speaking out, or any, you know, good sports figures with, you know, morals, et cetera? How come they're not stepping up and telling these kids, hey, this is wrong?
Well, and that's the thing of it. You know, you have even Al Sharpton. You know, he goes, well, we don't condone all of this stuff. But when you sit here and you talk about this, and you talk about this knockout game and everything else, and you bring the so-called community activists on board, you know, the black community activists, you know, and guys, call me anything you want. A racist, I don't care what you call me. But the reality is, when you bring those people on, the first thing that they do is they sit here and say, well, we don't want to categorize the knockout game that these are all black people doing this. We're sure that there's white people doing it. We just haven't found them yet. You know, so it's all by design. And the mainstream media, like your MSNBCs, your CNN, those guys, these liberal media sit out there. So they refer to this knockout as a game when it's nothing more than hate crime violence, black-on-white hate crime racial violence. And then the black community leaders say, well, we don't condone this kind of stuff, but we're not sure it's black guys doing it. When we've got all the video and all the proof and all the testimony and all the hospital visits that prove otherwise. So they're refusing to embrace it. And what's really sad about it is that, to me, makes the black activist, the real racist here. They're the ones who are destroying the black community. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, they need to speak up. They need to be stepping out. But the thing is, it's one lady I told you about, I can't remember her name, but she basically wrote a book that says what's happened to African-Americans in America today. There aren't people that are standing up for what is basically just right, and it doesn't matter what color you are. It's standing up for what is right, just like, you know, the Republicans that marched with Martin Luther King, you know, Martin Luther King. You know, or anybody who, you know, who does stand up against something wrong and not just, you know, pardon the terminology, I don't know, you know, basically you don't snitch.
Sure.
You know. is kind of the thing. So, you know, is this become, you know, the way she said it, it's gone from used to, it was so much, not favoritism, that's not the word I'm looking for. You supported your own kind so much that even if they were wrong, you still supported them because we, you know, have, you know, we were held back for so long.
Well, and, you know, that's the whole thing. Who held anybody back? I mean, that kills me when I hear all of that stuff because it makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. I have not enslaved anyone in my life. I have not done it. Not my place to. You know, whatever happened prior to me being born has absolutely nothing to do with anything. Martin, talk to me.
Oh, well, you're talking about the knockout game and the racial overtones to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think it's, even if it was one incident, I think they, you know, the activists and stuff should take a stronger stance against it because if nothing else, what they're, you know, what they need to consider is things never end at one thing. I mean, you know, people see what they see on social media. They occasionally see what they see on the news. And, you know, if there's not an element out there trying to diffuse it, you can ignore it if you want, but that doesn't diffuse it. I mean, we've been down that road a million times.
Let's look at the reality.
You know, sooner or later, it's going to be paybacks, you know, whether it's, you know, people being doing this for Trayvon or whatever. It's like, guys, you've got to get off, you know, if you claim to be an activist, especially if you're a preacher and you're, you know, a Christian preacher, you claim that, you've got to come out strong against this because, like I said, it's not going to end there. It never does.
The problem, here's where I'm getting at, though.
Sooner or later, you're going to have, if it's not addressed properly and it's not addressed aggressively from all angles, you're going to have people. I think it's one of the more important things that they got to look at. You're going to have people walking down the street scared shitless of any group of kids, whether it be black or white. You know, people will see a group of four or five.
But here's the thing, though.
Hanging off. You're going to start having Americans scared out of their wits of other Americans, of their neighbors and stuff. Like, it's just going to look like that video.
But essentially, that's exactly what... But isn't that what these black racist activists want, though? Because they refuse to condemn the black community for these attacks. They refuse to report these attacks within the black community. They refuse to hold the black community accountable to the same standard of legal behavior that they want to hold the white community accountable to. So by definition, these so-called black community leaders and activists who are sitting out here trying to act like this is no big deal and that these aren't racial crimes, they're the ones that are creating the disservice to the black man by telling the black man that they're not good enough to be held to the same standard as
well,
the white man.
And I don't even care if it's, you know, a racial crime. I even hate that connotation. It's young men, I don't care what color they are, smacking the crap out of, in a lot of cases.
It's also
people,
young women. It's not
people.
Just men.
It's just like, look, we just, not even take the racial connotation out of it. It's like we've got young people angry or so full of disrespect or something that they're just making themselves, they're behaving like they are criminals. They're assaulting people for no reason whatsoever. And the fear is going to be ratcheted up. And you're going to end up with, you know, the stereotype that, Let's say a real racist, some white person that just cannot understand black people. If you don't come out against it, you're giving that ignorant bastard all the ammo he needs.
But that's exactly what mainstream is doing now.
If we posted it on Facebook, you'll get, you know, sooner or later one of them is going to get angry. You know, sooner or later a group of ignorant white kids is going to get angry and they're going to go and they're going to knock the shit out of somebody.
But that's what they want. But that's what mainstream wants because as soon as... wait a minute. As soon as a white man strikes back, as soon as a white man goes out and knocks down a black man in the same fashion that they're doing, then that white man is going to be the biggest racist there is in America. You're going to have every black person on TV, Al Sharpton and all his cronies, screaming about racism in America, just like they did with the white Hispanic George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin crap. Mayo, what do you think? Do we need to include race in this conversation?
Yes, we do. That's what I was going to say. I will agree partially with Ed Martin. I mean, a thug is a thug is a thug, and it doesn't matter what color, skin tone, or what religion they are. There's good people and there's bad people, like you've heard me say before. But the thing is, it's not profiling. It's a fact. They are all, as you said, they're black on white crimes. So therefore, it does make it racist. You don't have the videos on YouTubes of white kids going out and striking elderly black people, or Jewish kids running around, you know, striking Palestinians in Birmingham or something. Crazy. But
right.
It is racial, and I mean, you can go back as far as, you know, one of the things you had talked about on the show, and that has been mentioned for years. Whether it's I'm getting the term correctly, sociologists,
mm-hmm.
Talking about it will get to a point when you have a society that does not have a strong family unit, meaning a mother and a father, so that good morals are instilled in the children, good moral upbringing. Mom and dad teach the fear of God when they're younger. You do the right thing. You get the smack on the butt or the smack on the back of the head, and that's mm-hmm. how you learn. And you don't do this dumb stuff like they're doing nowadays. And being even dumber about it, posting it on YouTube,
Well, see, that's the thing. That's the thing, because, I want to go down this road. Ed, I want you to respond to this, too. Violence expert Chuck Williams, and you guys can, for people who complain about my sources, this is a CNN.com story. But youth violence expert Chuck Williams blames the media and parents for what he calls extreme aggression in America's youth, because negative attention is so often rewarded. He goes on to say that this America, because America loves violence, and so do our kids. We market violence to our children, and we wonder why they're violent. It's because we are. Now, there's more to this, and I'll talk about that in a second. But that is an interesting paradox. I mean, this guy is a psychology professor at Drexel University in Philadelphia, and he goes on to talk, we do market violence to our children. When you look at all the games and everything else on your Xbox, your PlayStation, whatever your game is this week, most of the games that come out today are violence-related games. So we are letting our kids learn violence at a very young age, right?
Absolutely. Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to call bunk on that one. They just finished a study, it's like the English or the European American Medical Association, a study of 10,000 youths, and saw no increase in violence within 10,000 youths. And
what
the second thing, just from personal experience, I grew up watching Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner, so when they say cartoons instill violence, I've never dropped an anvil on anybody's head.
Well, I agree with you there, to be honest with you. There
was but you know what an anvil is to come across these days?
Do what?
I said, hey, now, I would have if I could have got an anvil up in the air, but do you know how hard it is to find an anvil?
Yeah, I'm with you there. They actually did try to go after Warner Brothers at one time and try to shut down Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner cartoons.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And one of the things, they keep coming out with these studies, and I tell you what, I don't know. The desensitizing that we do, and I think maybe not on a major scale, but when you've got everything from, Grand Theft Auto and all these Call of Duties and all the hate, there's violence without consequences. And it's violence with rewards. You kick the other avatar's ass, and you get points for it. So I think there has to be something in there, and it gets to the movies and a lot of other stuff that, I do think it's marketed to our kids. I would agree with the psychologist that we market violence to our kids.
Well, here's something else too, and I'm glad you brought up.
You go through life, and both in the real world too. You go through life, you do something wrong, and you don't pay any real consequences. Whether you're doing it at home, interactive games, and there's violence without consequences. It's glorified, and so I could see where that would bleed over a little bit. So it's like, hey, what the hell? Take the next step, drop somebody on the sidewalk,
Well, here's the thing, too,
to
look
at.
I definitely agree with
accountability.
And the responsible parenting thing.
But Ed, let's talk about these consequences, because you mentioned consequences four times in that rant. And here's the thing, and I want you to pay attention to this day, because the psychologist Chuck Williams also goes on to say that these kids know the consequences. They want to get arrested. They want to get caught. They want that notoriety. They know they're not going to go away forever because they're juveniles, they're kids. So it's a win-win all around for them. And he's right, because they post it on YouTube so people see it to get notice for it. And they know as a juvenile, you know, once they turn 18, all this stuff's going to be gone anyway, and it's never going to be reported. So they get all of this street cred. They get all this street credential. So they go to juvie hall for a couple of months. Big deal. They get all the street credential until they're 18. I think he's right about that. They do know the consequences.
And you know, and you're not just. I mean, you get a million hits on your beatdown of somebody. You know, because some people are sharing it out of outrage. Some of it probably think it's funny, and it's just, you know, I'm there. I just. And the other thing is devoid of the two-parent household, and, you know, I'm going to throw income in there, too. Mom or dad or just one or the other or neither, you got nothing to lose. So, you know, you go smack the crap out of somebody, and, you injure them.
Well,
right. What if the victim got coming for them? They can't sue your dumbass because, you got nothing. Well, there's no consequences there either. I mean, let's face it, if you are or any of... anybody that we know that actually has tried to build a life, you wouldn't do that because not only would you get locked up and, your friends, if you did it in, I'd beat the crap out of you just for doing it. But,
right.
Well, that's why I agree with states like Texas. If you're a teenager and you do an adult crime, you should do adult time.
Hold on. Well, explain to me this. Why do we still protect our juveniles? Because today, juveniles at 13 and 14 – are doing what was unheard of just 20 years ago at the age of 17 or 18. You've got kids as young as 10 and 12 going out being gangbangers now, and these records are always protected. Well, we don't want to stigmatize the child. What about all the people that crooked crap of a daggone juvenile, what about all the people they're victimizing? You know, I don't get this. And, Chuck Williams calls it the Miley Cyrus effect because teens will do anything to get noticed, no matter how unconscionable. And I think that that's right. I think that that's right. So why do we still protect these juvenile criminals, these juvenile thugs?
I tell you what, if you're man enough to knock somebody out on the sidewalk, you're man enough to keep somebody's bitch in prison, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know what? I agree. I mean, I used to have some thugs in an old neighborhood I lived in. They had a couple of gangs move in. Guys, the kids were under 18 years old. There was five of them. They showed up at my door one day yelling. Well, they didn't show up on my door. I lived on a little court. They stood on the street part of the court yelling at my front yard. It was a summer night. I was outside threatening my son, who was 12 at the time. These kids were 16 years old, 17 years old, threatening my son. They tried to act like they were going to jump on my yard to do something to him, so I told them to go in the house. I went in the house. Then they started running back and forth to my front porch, hitting the door, ringing the doorbell, running back to the street, just taunting the shit out of me. What are you going to do about it, old man? You can't do a damn thing about it. We can kick your ass, and you can't touch us. So I told all five of them, feel free to walk into my yard and try to kick my ass and see if I don't touch you. Three of them did. Three of them got their ass kicked. Three of them went back and brought seven of their buddies with them. They didn't like it much when they stared down the barrel of my 9mm. I didn't care what age they were. That was a physical violent threat on my property and against my family. You know, but if you do that today, this has been many years ago, if you do that today, I'm in jail for the duration. I'm in jail. They can do anything they want to do, but I'm the one who goes to jail and suffers the consequences for self-defense. So you see, I mean, that's the thing. We continually protect these juveniles, and everybody knows it. 20 years ago, you only had a couple of kids who really, really thought about the fact that an adult can't do anything to them. So an adult has some authority, but you don't have that today. You don't at all. So these kids don't care. When do we start holding these kids accountable and responsible? Forget these daycare centers we call juvenile hall. Forget that crap, because when they go to juvenile hall, all they do is sit in basically a dorm room. They're not in jail cells. They're in basically a dorm room learning new tricks from the criminal they're bunked next to. When do we do something about that and hold them accountable? Instead of going after the pawnbrokers, maybe we ought to look at that. What do you think?
Yeah, instead of going after, and I'm going to agree, instead of going after nonviolent guys that drug your fingers and get caught with a half ounce of weed, let them go. They're not knocking anybody out. Get them out of jail. Get them out of the prisons, and let's clear out some space for these little violent bastards.
Sure. you know, straight used to be a...
They're knocking people out today, and they're, you know, they're getting a million hits or whatever on YouTube, mm-hmm. and they're building the street creds. It's only going to escalate. They're not going to take it back down and say, well, you know, been there, done that. Don't need to do it anymore. No, they're going to take it to the next level. So you're playing knockout today, you're doing a drive by in a year. You know, that's what's going to happen.
Well, there's no doubt about it.
Well, here's the...
Go ahead, Mayo.
Well, I just started saying what maybe Ed Martin doesn't know, but I mean, just dealing with different people traveling the country, and I mean, I've bartended, and you pick up bartenders' ears and different things. You know, he was just, you know, talking about the guy with whatever, a little bit of weed and et cetera, get him away. But depending upon, you know, a drug deal is a drug deal. Doesn't matter. It's heroin, coke, meth, pot. You know, just because it's pot doesn't make it less, because here's the thing. What's crap here in Kentucky sells for 3 times the amount in some place like New York. Whereas in New York, something
sure.
like coke is really cheap but very high-priced here in Kentucky. So... just because it's marijuana doesn't mean it's less of a crime. You know, I mean, I don't
know if you
mentioned
it. Well,
okay, but
well, I mean, ultimately, to some degree, I agree with Martin, though, because, I mean, weed is not the gateway drug. There are too many studies out there to show that marijuana is not a gateway drug and that there actually is medicinal benefit to marijuana. Now, I understand the context you're stating is a drug is a drug is a drug. And if you're doing something illegal, you should be held accountable for it, and I'm totally with you there. So the thing is to legalize marijuana before we go down that road, and there's a fight for that today just about everywhere. Now, my thing is the violence aspect and why the mainstream media and why the black leadership continues to try to cover this up and continues to do such a disservice to the black community, because yeah. essentially every time these guys do this stuff – and this black activist goes on TV and gets quoted of, well, you know, we're not sure, it's just black people, there's white people involved and everything else. They're justifying the action. And when you justify the action, you just told every black youth that their value is less than the value of a white man. Because if a white man was doing this, the white man would be chastised, put in jail, beat up somewhere. He would be crucified. But if the black man does this, there's no racial intent to it at all. There's nothing whatsoever to that. So you set these
yeah.
two
and
sets
I,
of rules,
and
they are
the
ones
thing,
that are elevating the white man
yeah.
for their own personal activist gain. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I want to dredge up the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing again, but it's you look at the disparity between just, you know, the media and the black activists and everybody for that matter. If you had one wannabe white guy got into a scuffle with a black kid, and somebody ended up dead. You know, it's considerably worse than the knockout game that somebody ended up dead. But somebody's going to end up dead in the knockout game sooner or later anyway, if they
well,
haven't already.
Okay.
But the thing is you look at it, it's two people did what they did, and they just had a, you know, as Dale Gillespie once said, you had two people out looking for trouble. Guess what? They found each other. You know, big surprise there. But... you know, it just amazes me
oh, yeah.
that drug got on for well over a year, and the outrage lasted for over a year. Now we've got multiple cases of premeditated knockout on, you know, of elderly people and things like that, and there's no outrage. And, yeah, I'm with you there. The disparity in the outrage is it borders on just, it's offensive, really.
Well, it makes it pathetic, because what you have now is you have two sets of rules. And it's totally wrong to me for a daggone black activist to sit out here and tell the black community that they should not be held accountable to the same standard that the white community is. Because that is the basic problem in every situation you run into when it comes to race, is everybody wants to act like they're unequal. The black community activists and those like Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and those guys, they sit out there and perpetually preach that the black man is lesser than the white man, when that's not true. But when you don't hold the same standards accountable, then you can't have the fair and equal balance in the law that Mayo, you talk about all the time. You can't get there. And here's an interesting thing for you, too. In New York, there were 8 knockout attacks just in October in New York. But the police are denying and saying that they have no evidence of a trend. You've got 8 black-on-white knockout attacks in New York, but there's no trend here to talk about. Look away. You've got the same thing going on in Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois, Missouri, Washington, Detroit, all over the country, but there's no trend here. They refuse to go down that road. Now, at the same time, that's something funny for you real quick, and I guess we'll get into this real fast before we go, but at the same time, you know, you've got a concealed carry permit as a white man. You pass a black man on the street walking the opposite direction. You pass each other on a sidewalk. You pull that gun out of your hip, and you've got it ready to go when you hear that guy coming up behind you because you're expecting it now. The guy comes up behind you, you duck, turn around, and fire. Black man's dead. Now you got a white killing a black man. It's the biggest daggone racial crime in the history of the world. Just ask George Zimmerman, you know. But in New York, we want you to get knocked out, and I'll tell you why. New York City authorities have been sending out notices to residents of New York that have had legal guns for years, and they're demanding that they give up their weapons because New York just went to this five-round clip crap. New York just went to this 5 rounds of ammo clip crap for their weapons. So if you have a weapon that holds more than 5 rounds of ammo, you are now illegal, and you have to give us your weapons. Now, I'm sorry, but why would you live in New York? Who in the hell is the government think they are? This was okay for you to buy, but now we're going to take it away from you because we don't want you to arm yourself to protect you and your family. Now, it does say that the firearm can be sold or permanently removed from the city of New York once it's been turned in or it's been modified. What the hell is on? This is what we've been talking about. This is exactly what we've been talking about. So now New York is going to take your guns away. The government just said, we can take your guns. Forget the Second Amendment. If we don't like your weapon, we're going to take it. The Second Amendment no longer applies. What do you think about that?
Funny thing was, when I first heard about the story, the way the law was written, it actually made all the guns that the New York police had illegal.
Yeah, I remember
Yes,
that.
It did, and still are, by the way. Go ahead.
You know what? To me, it kind of half falls within states' rights and things like that. If the New York State Legislature wants to do that, kind of let them do it, you know? I don't live in New York. If you guys are dumb enough to elect politicians that are going to treat you like kids, or worse, criminals, then you deserve what you get. Kiss my ass. I'm not going to New York. And I'm,
so
you
you're
know,
telling me...
And on
so
the
you're
other
telling
hand,
me.
Being a business person, as the law reads, the gun has to be stored outside the city limits of New York, at which point I'm going to buy a secure... If I have a lot of money, I'm just going to buy a secure building about 150 yards outside of the city limits of New York and open a gun range, and all the New York residents can come out there and store their guns 50 feet outside of the city limits of New York. And you know what? I might even have a big finger poured into the concrete. You know?
But what you just said disturbs me.
Up yours.
What you just said disturbs me greatly, Ed Martin, and I tell you why. Well, I'm a firm believer in states' rights myself. I really am. I think the state should have the right to decide whether they want to allow abortion or not. I think the state should have the right to decide whether they want to legalize marijuana or not. But I don't think that the state has the right to decide to violate the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. They're a Bill of Rights for a reason.
I mean, you still get to own a gun.
We're not splitting hairs. We're not splitting hairs. You have to have...
Some states have outlawed full auto weapons and things like that, you know. Armor-piercing, I'm sure there's limits. Again, if the residents of New York City have elected that government, then you know what? Knock yourself out. Live like a bunch of victims. Let the government treat you like criminals. You voted for these clowns. They're yours. Forget you. To hell with you.
I don't get it, Ed. I'm still not agreeing with you, but I do get this.
But then that's
we are out of time. Go ahead.
By another city to do the same thing. Oh, well, New York did it, so we can do it.
Right. I don't get it. We are out of time. That much I do know. Mr. Martin, final thoughts. Mayo, thanks for the call.
Final thoughts. You know,
thank you.
All too often I end up ragging on the media, and I'm going to rag on them again. You know, everything, the knockout game. I'm sorry I had to jump on you there for a little bit and make some money, pay some taxes. You know, it just amazes me that the media steers clear of it, that law enforcement, as you pointed out, steers clear of it. I mean, come on, guys. It has a name. It's happening. It has a name. There's videos everywhere. It's happening. And being the smartass that I would be, like, okay, so the New York Police Department says there's not a, or the New Jersey, whatever, you know, authorities say, there's not a problem. It's just not a trend. So I'm a smartass. I would say, okay, so you got, what, 8 reported cases? We got however many dozen videos of it up. Exactly what, you know, all right, Mr. Politician, what constitutes a trend? Obviously 8 dozen. How many old people have to have their dentures knocked down their throat and their brittle cheekbones smashed by some pissed-off youth before you actually call it a trend? Give me a freaking number, you arrogant piece of garbage. You know, and it just amazes me, the denial. It's just, we're so scared nowadays of certain labels being affixed to us. You know what? I'm not scared. You know, I'm not a racist. I'm not. So I'm not afraid of it. You know, it's a damn shame that we're so afraid of labels, and we're so afraid of this, that, or the other, that we allow our old people, literally, to walk down the street in some cities now and allow them to be afraid because we're afraid of, you know, our politicians are afraid of taking a stand and calling a spade a spade.
Well, it's interesting because I tell you what bothers me more than anything is the fact that this preconceived agenda, and it all comes back to mainstream media and politicians. You know, you mentioned the term politically correct. I'll tell you what politically correct is. I even posted this on our Facebook page at World of Politics earlier. But politically correct, yeah, exactly. But politically correct is nothing more than a term that's used for whiny, overly sensitive pansies who need everything sugar-coated for them. I'm not going to be politically correct ever. I'm not going to refer to every black person I see as an African-American. When 99.9% of them have never been to Africa. Forget that. If you're black, you're black. If you're white, you're white. If you're green, you're green. That's my color world. That's where I live. But I am going to tell you this. This black-on-white crime that they keep labeling as a knockout game, we call it what it is, a racial crime. Let's start using that term in the media. Another racial crime or another knockout crime. Use the word crime because that's exactly what you are. You're committing a crime, and we're letting these criminals get away with this crap. You talk about these young teens, and I continue wanting to talk about how these kids are so impressionable. Garbage. There's no such thing as a kid today who's a kid anymore. They learn too much too quick, and we don't do a damn thing to stop that. But what they have to learn is the consequences for those actions. Forget hiding the juvenile records. Put them out for the public to see. We put pedophiles on a national database for adults. Let's do the same for juvenile offenders. Let's do the same. Hold these kids accountable. Let them be chastised. When I see a kid walking down my street, if I see he's online for busting into people's houses, I'm going to watch my garage that night. I'm going to pay attention. They're going to be stigmatized because they're stigmatizing a lot of people that we call victims. Call a knockout crime a crime. Call a black-on-white crime a hate crime, just as you would the other way. Quit making the black person feel like they are inferior to the white man because we are not going to hold them accountable to the same rules of law. Because that division is created by your politicians. That division is created by the race. And right now, that division is created more and more every day. It's not the Ku Klux Klan that's the problem, folks. It's the black activists, the daggone Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, those guys who have spent the better part of the last 40 years dividing you and me to make themselves money and a future. Who in the right mind would ever put Al Sharpton on TV and act like he's somebody? Garbage is still garbage. I don't care what bag you put it in. You want to eliminate the garbage and clean up the streets? Eliminate the garbage that's spewing from the mouths of these so-called mainstream journalists and these so-called great liberal politicians. Fix it. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock with Dale the Truth. He should be here Thursday night, the TNT show. And don't forget good friend Ken Molman on Sunday night at 7 with Liberty Unbridled. Of course, all shows right here on the MVM Radio Network. live at 7 p.m. And you can get your podcast edition right there at LouisvillePolitics.com for later replay. Ed Martin, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, sir.
We'll talk to you next week, sir. Mayo, thanks so much for the call. In the meantime, folks, have a great week. God bless each and every one of you. We'll see you.